Before we start the show, just a quick content warning. We will be discussing the report issued yesterday on the Blackhawks sexual assault lawsuit in the third segment of today's show. If that's something, for whatever reason, you don't feel comfortable hearing about, please feel free to skip that part of today's episode. The first two segments are all Flyers news and a preview of tonight's game versus the Edmonton Oilers.
Your Locked On Flyers, your daily podcast on the Philadelphia Flyers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, and welcome to the Locked On Flyers podcast for Wednesday, October 27th, your daily dose of Flyers news, analysis, and high-quality content that feels like it's been forever since the Flyers played last.
It does.
And we got to wait until late tonight for the puck to drop, but it'll be worth it. Should be a fun game. Thanks for making us your first listen every day. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Flyers to keep up to date on Flyers news and our episodes. You can also email the show at lockedonflyers@gmail.com. I'm Rachel Donner. You can find me on Twitter at rmiriam. I'm here with Russ Cohen, who is on Twitter at Sportsology. On today's show, we are going to preview tonight's game versus the Edmonton Oilers, the first of a back-to-back, with Alan Mitchell, otherwise known as Low Tide, who is a writer for The Athletic who covers the Oilers. It's a really great conversation, so I am
super knowledgeable.
Really looking forward to you hearing it. And then in our last segment, like I said in the content warning at the top of the show, we're going to talk about what happened with the report related to the Chicago Blackhawks that came out yesterday. And again, if this is something that you feel uncomfortable with, totally understand. Feel free to bounce after that conversation with Alan Mitchell. Locked On Flyers is free and available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, wherever you get your podcasts. So subscribe and you'll get all of our episodes here on the Locked On Sports Network. Real quickly, Russ, before we get into the Oilers preview, yesterday we learned from the Flyers that, much like we talked about yesterday, Ryan Ellis is definitely out for tonight's game. Very disappointing, but not unexpected.
No, I mean, I didn't hold out much hope. You didn't hold out much hope. The only problem is if the Oilers go on the power play, the Flyers are in trouble. I mean, they're in trouble just trying to cover the McDavid line anyhow, but now they're in real trouble because I would imagine they're going to try and set up the McDavid line against whoever they think the worst pairing is. I imagine they'll go after the Yandel pairing for a little bit, but they might even stay on the top pairing too because they might feel like they could just skate past Braun as well. But they'll probably go for the third pairing most likely, and then we'll see what happens. But Ellis, he'll be missed. Again, on the penalty kill, 5-on-5. This is a tall order now to win this game.
It really is. Yeah, it's double tough, like you said, because, you know, Oilers get last change. So it will be difficult for the Flyers to keep up the matchups in the most ideal way. Once again, we are so thrilled to welcome to Locked On Flyers, Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide, who is a writer for The Athletic covering the Oilers. Welcome.
Well, thank you. And I want to say I'm a fan of both of you, so it's my honor to be on the show.
Well, thanks for saying that. Your money's in the mail.
It won't get here, but thanks.
So getting into learning more about the Edmonton Oilers, what were the key off-season moves the team made, and how are they panning out so far?
Well, the big one was signing Zach Hyman, and he got a rich contract for a long time. And there's a lot of risk there. And signing or trading for Duncan Keith and trading for Warren Fogle. And the big move they didn't make was replacing their goaltending tandem of Mike Smith and Mikko Koskinen. And, you know, in all honesty, they've all worked out. Like, everything, Hyman has 5 goals in 5 games. Keith, along with Cody Ceci, who was another addition, have played well enough on the second pair. And the goaltending has been a strength of the team. You know, they're 5-0-0, and they're not going to go 82-0, so we know there's going to be issues later. But every bet Holland made, and a couple of them were on older players, and Smith and Keith. and he got dragged a little bit in the media for it. But right now, Holland looks like a genius because everything has worked pretty well for the Oilers so far.
Alan, how good do fans feel about Hyman? I mean, he's obviously doing well for the Oilers, but also the Leafs are missing him to the point where their fans are almost ready to mutiny. How's that played out in the market?
Well, he's a perfect fit for this market because he, like an Islander fan or a Flyer fan or a Ranger fan or a New Jersey fan, I guess, from that area, the fan base likes physical players. It's a working person's town. It's a lunchbox town. And so he kind of fits that that feel that they have for their players. You know, Oilers fans love McDavid and they love Draisaitl and they love Wayne Gretzky. But a big part of the community relates directly to the Lee Fogelins, to the Ryan Smiths. And not to say that Hyman is, you know, 6'2 and a bruiser, but he's tenacious on the forecheck. He is an agitator. He doesn't back down from anything. Plus, he's skilled. So he's a perfect fit. And it also his backstory. You know, he writes children's books. He's a good guy. His interviews are positive. So he's been a massive home run. In fact, to the point where nobody's mentioning the contract anymore. And before before the season started, that got a lot of mention. Now nobody's saying a word about it.
You mentioned that the team is off to a great start. They're 5-0 right now. Do you think it's more than McDavid and Draisaitl? Like, who else is contributing?
Well, that's the really big question. And so far, the answer is yes, others are contributing. But it's the third line. The top line is McDavid with Hyman and Puljujarvi. Sometimes Draisaitl moves up there. Certainly during the homestand, that was the case. And then the second line is Nugent Hopkins with Yamamoto and whomever's left over. But it's the Draisaitl is at center, or Nugent is one of the two for the second line. But the same suspects are scoring, and McDavid and Draisaitl. Nugent's had a good start. The third line has been a key. Derek Ryan with Warren Fogle and Zach Cassian. They're key because they're not getting outscored. So at 5-on-5, the Oilers aren't giving up as much as they used to. And on top of that, Cassian scored a couple. Fogle has a goal. Derek Ryan scored a goal in the first game. So they're all contributing. And I don't think they've scored a goal every game. I don't think that's going to happen as the year goes by. But a key element for the Oilers that did not exist a year ago is the third line that can outscore opponents. And honestly, it's been years, guys. It's been years since they had an identifiable third line that they could send over the boards that wasn't being propped up by one of the skill guys.
Yeah, that's a big factor. Alan, who deserves the credit for the Jesse Puljujärvi turnaround? Because it looked horrible a few years ago. People were writing him off. He went back to, you know, his homeland, and nobody knew what was going to happen. And now he's scoring. Now he's doing well.
Well, I think there's a lot. Number one, the player, Jesse Puljujärvi, has really matured as a player. And the second thing is, I think that the organization, and this is probably because Holland is there now, they had a realization that they were pushing kids through way too quickly. And Puljujärvi should have been in Finland as a teenager. And I think everybody knew it, except there was pressure because of the cap issues to play him out of the box. So Puljujärvi went away for a year. And I will give Ken Holland credit for not trading him, because there was a rumor here in Edmonton for a long time that he was going to the New York Rangers. And then there was a rumor he was going to Carolina. And that was in the year that he was, you know, in Finland and his rights would have been traded. But and I think Elias Andersson was mentioned, and Julian Gauthier were a couple of the names. He got back here, and it was, you know, he started on the third line, and Tippett didn't put a lot of pressure on him. But it became very obvious early last year in 2021 that he was the best skill right winger they had. And he was big and he could forecheck. Wasn't perfect. He and McDavid had, you know, some getting used to each other to do. It takes a while for line mates. But this year has been another step forward again. He's turning over pucks. He's driving plays. He's scoring goals from outside the, you know, the kill zone. He's playing extremely well. And I think he's at a point now where you can write him in next to McDavid for the rest of this year. I wonder if next year they look at maybe moving him to a another line where he can help push, and they could, you know, ideally you'd like to have more than two scoring lines. If they could get two that were really going well, that's the key. But Puljujärvi, for me, he's the third best forward on this team, and that means that he's past Nugent Hopkins, who's also a player of quality.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. he was left for dead by the fan base. I'm telling you, they were mostly ready to trade him for, you know, strip him for parts sort of thing. And I'll say this, that I think that Haaland, when he got here, there was a lot of pressure to succeed initially, and he was very cautious about trading him. And I guess it goes back to his Detroit days. He did something similar with Yuri Hudler back in whatever year that was, 15 years ago or so. And Hudler just played over in Europe for a year. Then he came back and he signed the contract that had been waiting for him the previous season, just like Esa Puljujärvi did. Problem the Oilers have now is Puljujärvi's going to put up some numbers this year, and he's an RFA, and he's close enough to free agency that they have to worry. So that they don't have a lot of cap money, so that's going to be a hurdle for the offseason that they'll worry about then. But it's an issue coming forward for sure.
One of my favorite things I get to do on the show is talk about Built Bars, because I almost always have one with me when I'm out and about. Built Bars are a soft protein bar, but they taste just like candy bars. And I don't know how they do it, but they have so many amazing flavors to choose from. Something for everyone, no matter what your tastes are. Some of my personal favorites are raspberry, strawberry, cherry barcia, and salted caramel. They just sent me a pack of blueberry muffin flavor, and I'm excited to try those. If you can't decide, though, you can order a mixed box and they'll send you two of each flavor. But the best part is that they're healthy. Built Bars are great if you're looking to lose or maintain weight while indulging in that delicious treat. They have 17 or 18 grams of protein and only 130 to 180 calories. They're low carb, low sugar, and great if you're on the keto diet. So go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Switching gears a little bit, the Oilers have had a reputation of being, I would say, not so great on the defensive side of things. How are they shaping up this season?
It's early and it's still an issue, I'll tell you that. At 5-on-5, they're not world beaters. They're special teams has really taken them a long way, but they're competitive. And the issue so far has been on the top pair, Darnell Nurse and Tyson Berry ordinarily play with the McDavid forward group. So it's like a group of five. And Berry's had a tough start. So they checked down with Berry and put Evan Bouchard, the young defenseman, in, and that's worked really well. The second pairing with Heath and CeCe has given up a lot of shots, but not a lot of goals. And their expected goals, which is a cool measure for a defenseman, it's a good number. It's early. You can't really trust these numbers yet. But it tells you that they're heading in a good direction. The third pair, Russell and Berry, have played together a little bit. It's not strong. Bouchard and Russell was stronger, and they've got Cuckoo in the mix. I would say absolutely, if this were the deadline, we'd be talking about a trade for a defenseman. But they're going to let this thing grow for sure. And they have the whole team, beyond what the media ever says, and it's not everybody in the media, just some, is really bought into the Duncan Keith-Cody CeCe pairing. And they're at 50% goal share right now, so it's not like they're struggling too much. But if there is a bottom that's going to fall out, it's either going to be in goal or on defense. And although they played well, I still think there are a lot of skeptics about the Oilers defense, especially the second pair, and they're going to play big minutes.
Well, sticking with the defense, Alan, thankfully Bouchard is getting a chance. And, you know, I don't like to rush prospects, but I felt like he was ready last year. So, like, if I was going to blame somebody, who would I blame? Would I blame Tippett? Would I blame Haaland for just over-marinating like he would in Detroit? I'm not going to blame the player because I felt like the player was there, and I think you're seeing the results.
Well, I think you've nailed it. I think my belief, this is just my personal belief from observation, I think Tippett was unhappy with both Caleb Jones and Ethan Bear at the beginning of the year, and maybe even William Lagesson, and he was never comfortable with that group. And in the playoffs, Bear had a tough playoff, as did Jones. And so I think the coach really was not comfortable with the young players he already had on the roster. So he played Chris Russell more until Russell got hurt. And then they would play, they traded for Kulikov. They're always moving veterans into that defensive group. So I think what happened in the offseason is he and Holland probably got together and said, look, you got to have one young player. Let's make it Bouchard. They moved out there and Jones, who, by the way, I think both of them have really good NHL futures. I think Ethan Bear specifically is going to be a very fine player.
Yeah.
And they opted for veterans in the top four, supposedly, and then Bouchard would be their young guy this year, and they'd bring him along, and then they've got a few other young guys coming. But I think the coach just was not comfortable with the youth he was seeing, and he kept backing up Bouchard because of it, and the season got away from him. And I think the coach even sort of implied that he felt guilty that he didn't play Bouchard more. But I'll tell you guys, Bouchard, Nurse is the best defenseman on this team. But yeah, Bouchard has been the second best defenseman on this team by far so far this year. He's been outstanding.
Yeah, I was honestly really surprised that they gave up on Bear. But yeah, it's good to see Bouchard, you know, filling those shoes.
The disappointment of Bear is that right-handed defenseman who can play top four, move the puck well, and do all the things Bear can do, they're basically unicorns. They're tough to get. And, you know, Bear's weaknesses are that he's not a big man. And even though he'll battle, sometimes the bigger man will get the best of him along the wall. And then his other issue was experience. Well, you know, that's the catch-22. You got to play defenseman to get experience and yada, yada, yada. So Bear is he was trained by the Oilers, and the benefit is going to go to Carolina. And then when he reaches free agency, somebody will sign into big dollars, and that's the team that'll pay him, but maybe won't get the heart of his career. The disappointment for Oilers fans is the heart of his career is going to be in Carolina.
Right in our division, where we do not like to see that.
I don't blame you. He's a really good player.
On the goaltending side of things, you know, again, like you said, early days, can't really look at the numbers that seriously, but Koskinen has been playing a little bit above expectation, and Mike Smith is out. Do you think they're going to pick up anybody else, or are they going to, you know, use Stuart Skinner?
I think they'll use Skinner when needed during the year, and I think they're going to make a trade at the deadline, and I'll tell you why. Koskinen is, I think he's a fine goaltender. But he does have a great glove, but he blocks out the sun everywhere else. So basically, there was a goal scored by Vegas where, for almost not from the point, but a little bit inside the point, it beat Koskinen to tie the game. I think it was Hague, but I'm not sure. And that's a shot that you know, sometimes people will be surprised that it goes in. Koskinen moved, but it wasn't in time. And if it wasn't going to hit him, it was going to go in. And that you can, you know, be critical, but there's a lot of goalies who don't have fast enough gloves in the NHL. He's a big man. He can play. I just don't know that if he's the guy who's going to steal you a game in the playoffs. And because of Mike Smith's age and because Koskinen is not handpicked by Holland, you know, he's tried. He tried to get Markstrom in year one of
let
his.
Let me ask you, Alan. I have to ask you this because I've been told this. You may know the answer. I'm not a big Koskinen guy. Was he handpicked by Ken Hitchcock?
No.
Because that's what I've heard.
Koskinen was signed during the Chiarelli era. And then right before Chiarelli got fired, he signed him to the deal that he's got now. Okay. So I would suggest that the thing about Holland is, you know, I observed him Detroit a long time. And he is really patient, like way more patient than Peter Chiarelli was, who, you know, Chiarelli was extremely aggressive. I'm not saying, you know, passing judgment on him, although there were a lot of moves that he made that didn't work out. But he was trying to, you know, they had a brand new building, man, and they were charging a lot more for prices, for tickets, and he had to fill it, and he had to create some excitement. So he did by making a lot of trades. And so when you're looking at all of that, I thought Holland would move out, and he did try with Markstrom. This past year, he tried with Kemp to get Kemper out of Arizona. But I think it's a niche that he's wanted to scratch since he got here. And I think you'll see Koskinen and the first round pick heading out of town. I always say to Anaheim, but I don't know about Gibson. It's headed somewhere. I just don't know where. And he'll pick up a goalie. If the first round pick goes, it'll be a goalie coming back who's got some term, I believe. But that's maybe, and another defenseman are where he's going to look at the deadline.
All right, my last one for you is, what's the weak point in the Oilers that the Flyers can maybe take advantage of?
Well, I've seen the Flyers. They look like they're a fun team at the very least. I would say that the areas where the Oilers can be taken advantage of right now would be whenever the third pairing is out there, and the shots that the Oilers are giving up now are usually from far range, and they're not giving up as many high. This has happened since Tippett got here. I don't know how he does it, but he does it. The high danger chances are usually around even, but if you get enough high danger chances against Koskinen, the puck will go in the net. And I think that staying out of the penalty box is the number one thing any team playing the Oilers should do. Like, to the point where you, even if a guy maybe, you know, you trip him or whatever, the Oilers are so impressive on the power play, especially when they get going early, that I would, you know, I know Dallas Aikens came in here last week and said, we're not going to take any penalties, and they did, and it cost them the game. So don't take penalties.
Flyers took too many last game against Florida, so it'll be
Well, thank you so much once again, Alan, for joining us. Where can people find you out there?
They can find me at Low Tide on Twitter, LOWETIDE. I write for The Athletic, Edmonton, and I'm at TSN 1260 weekdays on the lowdown, 10 to noon Edmonton time.
We're back and better than ever. A new web interface for the start of the basketball season and more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football action this season. Head to our new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From basketball, football, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, and UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Once again, thanks for making Locked On Flyers your first listen every day. We are free and available on all of your podcasting platforms. Okay, so we're about to get into a tough conversation, but one that's, I think, important to have because this affects a wide swath of NHL teams right now. Even though it's focused on one team, the Chicago Blackhawks, at the moment. And if you need a short reminder about what happened, Brad Aldrich was a video coach for the Blackhawks back in 2010 when they won the Stanley Cup against our Philadelphia Flyers. And it had come out, or there was a report about an incident of sexual assault involving a player. And then in recent days, that former player and a high school student sued the Blackhawks for negligence related to that incident. The player at the time said it was non-consensual. Brad Aldrich denies that. And as a result of Aldrich being allowed to resign at the time, this high school student that sued the team was also allegedly a victim of assault from Brad Aldrich in a later position that he held at the school. So as a result of all of these things coming to light via the lawsuit, the team was pressured into an independent investigation after theirs turned up no wrongdoing. And the results of that independent investigation were released on Tuesday. The outcome of all that is that Bowman is out in Chicago. He resigned. Al McIsaac, who was the senior director of hockey administration, was also out. These were the last remaining people involved in that 2010 team. The Blackhawks CEO, Danny Wirtz, said he has directed the legal department at the Blackhawks to reach a settlement with both the former player and the Michigan high school student who have sued the team. they put out a statement that basically said, we're sorry, we've learned our lesson and changed, and then, you know, stick with us. We promise we're better now. Just all of this is really overwhelming. And
it's a lot.
The statement by the team, you know, just feels disingenuous, I'm going to say.
I mean, it doesn't feel great. I hope that there is a settlement that's actually fair. I mean, I don't know if I got that feeling that it was going to be a truly fair settlement. But the fact that they're going to try and reach one, I guess, is a positive. It's so many years later. It's just, you know, that's what makes this so awful and difficult. And that's the part that really gets to me.
It's hard to look back that far and have definite memories of what happened in terms of the conversations, you know, after the incident was reported. So, you know, you have to take everything with a little bit of a grain of salt, but there is also some corroboration involved in the report. And it really leads to some severe negligence on behalf of the Blackhawks here. A lawyer from the investigating firm said that, you know, weeks after the incident happened and was reported, there was a meeting with John McDonough, McIsaac, Bowman, Jay Blunk, and Kevin Cheveldayoff, who's currently with the Jets, Joel Quenneville, who's currently with the Florida Panthers, and James Gary, who were all with the team at the time. They met to discuss what happened, and decisions were made not to pursue anything as a result of that meeting. And, you know, as a result, I really think Joel Quenneville and John McDonough look absolutely heartless. I mean, there's no other way for me to say it.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, the fact that the quote came out that McDonough said it was decided that the group would not alert HR or do anything about the incident during the playoffs so as to not disturb team chemistry. Like that, I can't tell you how awful that is and how bad that is. And so when you hear that, but then you also kind of wonder, because you had heard that in these conversations with the other people mentioned that they were a little fuzzy and whatever. Even in the statement, to me, it's not 100% clear that they're going to have to even address this. So do I expect anything more to come out of this? Not really. Is that right? No, but I don't expect it.
Yeah, I think that's what's really, you know, the difficult part is that, again, because, you know, this is not legal action. This was an independent investigation with a report, and only, you know, the NHL and the organizations involved have authority to do anything, and that's on them. And the likelihood of anything beyond where we're at now happening is small. The NHL did fine the Blackhawks $2 million, which is kind of a joke, honestly.
It's really nothing. I mean, if you want to put it in perspective, what people are talking about is like the Arizona Coyotes, when they pre-tested players, they lost a first and a second round pick. The Blackhawks probably should have lost a first and a second round pick as well. Just $2 million, and I get it, a million's going to charity. We don't know where the other million's going, by the way. It wasn't detailed. But at least a million's going to local organizations supporting sexual assault survivors. That's great. Again, it would have been nice if it would have been detailed where the other million's going. But I do think you also have to take away draft picks. It's happened in other sports for other various things. And it really is the only thing that seems to hurt an organization, because $2 million, let's face it, it's nothing.
No, not to an organization like this. I mean, it's pocket change. And, you know, the other part is that the NHL could do more. Gary Bettman said that if Jay Blunk or Stan Bowman, John McDonough, and Al McIsaac want to get jobs in the league, they'll have to have a meeting first, which that's nothing.
Again, I looked at that and just shrugged my shoulders.
I think, you know, similarly for Joel Quenneville and Kevin Cheveldayoff, who currently have jobs in the league, they basically like kick the can down the road a little bit and hoping that things will die down and that those teams won't have to fire those guys.
I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't have that feeling.
I don't think so either. But I don't think either of them should have a job, to be honest. I think it was just absolutely unconscionable what they did. They failed to protect players under their care. And I find that to be completely unacceptable.
Yeah, it's a total failure of the organization. There's no question about it.
All right. Well, we will see what happens with this. But again, you know, my heart goes out to the players involved, and that I hope that they are able to find some peace in all of this and know that there's a lot of people. Yeah, a lot of people are out there supporting them, and, you know, our hearts go out to them.
Yeah, I mean, these are life changing things that take a lot to overcome. So, yeah, we're with them.
Just so we end on a much lighter note, we will have a Flyers fun thing today. And Oscar Lindblom and his girlfriend looked absolutely stunning in their Halloween costume. Alma and Oscar both posted it to their Instagram. Just the makeup job. They're like clowns, but black and white with a little bit of red on it. And I just find these costumes to be so well done.
They're great. There's no question, but if I were like 8, 9, I might be scared to death.
Maybe. I might.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's a bad history with clowns in this country. When you're like 3 to 5, you're happy to see a clown, right? It's good. And then after that, it was kind of weird. And then when they started using clowns in like horror movies, it all changed for me.
We all float down here, right?
Yeah. I just didn't want to see a clown anymore after that. So those memories come back. But it is a great, great picture. I give him credit.
All right. Well, thanks for making us your first listen every day. We will be back again tomorrow with a recap of tonight's game versus Edmonton, a look ahead to the second half of the back-to-back against the Canucks. As a reminder, we always want to hear from you. Send us in mailbag questions via Twitter at LockedOnFlyers. Or you can email the show at lockedonflyers@gmail.com. I'm Rachel. I'm on Twitter at rmiriam. That's rmiriam.
I'm Russ, and I'm on Twitter at Sportsology, SportsOlogy.
You made us your first listen. Now make your second listen Locked On Fantasy Hockey. Host Scott Cullen leans on his decades of fantasy hockey insight and experience every day to help you be the expert of your fantasy league. It's free and available on all platforms.